Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be talking about living life with purpose. The title of the book we're going to be discussing today is Be the Change. And Lisa Endlich is my guest today from New York. And I was so intrigued by this material that it was pretty hard to put the book down while I was reading it because it was really unique. A whole different perspective. So for those of you that think that there aren't people out there doing something very special, and if you've been listening to corporate bashers and all kinds of things, you need to listen to this interview today because it's really going to be important. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Lisa, I know that you are a best-selling author. You have had in the past a best-selling book called The Goldman Sachs, The Culture of Success. You've worked as a management consultant, you've been involved with political fundraising, and you've also been involved in Wall Street quite a bit as a trader. You've been involved with a number of charities, you've traveled to different parts of the world, you've got certain interests relative to AIDS. Why did you feel you needed to go from one positioning of being related to success to talking about some pretty famous people who are out there in the world making a difference and doing it so quietly?
Well, I'll tell you, it really began with my own failure. My husband and I had been trying to get involved in charity, to give money away to things that we cared about, but we were trying to do it wisely, and I have to tell you, we were doing it badly. We were responding to the pleas of our friends. We were writing checks when pleas came through the mail. And that really just, it's a very unsatisfactory philanthropy. And I felt that we were bumbling and stumbling. And really, I started this book by thinking, who can I talk to who's doing it well? And maybe I can learn something. And if I learn something, maybe I can share that with my readers. So I combed the universe, or at least the United States, for people who I felt were really making an important change in other people's lives, whose philanthropy really was having an impact, and I begged them for interviews.
And they responded to you, which surprised you.
Well, it did surprise me because, you know, I was afraid that people wouldn't want to talk about what they were doing. In some cases, it's very personal. One of the interviewees in my book, who is literally spending tens of millions of dollars in South Africa on AIDS research, he did the interview anonymously. A lot of people kind of want to fly under the radar with their philanthropy, either because they don't want to be besieged by people asking for money, or because they're really very, very humble people who don't want to get out there and brag about what they're doing.
I think that this very often is typical because in my experience of working with people that are very dedicated, they really don't want flag waving. They're not out there because of PR. They're not doing what they want to do because they want someone to give them, you know, 500 million brownie points and the great beyond. They're doing it because they believe in something. And they feel like they want to contribute to a legacy that has a positive feel to it. And that's what I got from the interviews that you did. These people were willing to share their stories. They were willing to discuss what was important to them. And what came through so loudly and clearly was their integrity and the sense of purpose that they had with what they were doing. With every single person you wrote about. That's pretty powerful.
It was very powerful. These were all people who were self-made. Their wealth, you know, they had earned all of their wealth on their own. Some of them, and I would really hasten to say that some of them were extremely wealthy. I interviewed Melinda Gates, which doesn't get any wealthier than that. But some of them were, you know, a couple where one's a doctor and one's a teacher. People who are comfortable, but not people who are fabulously wealthy. But they were all self-made. They were extremely generous. And they were very grateful. They were grateful for the good fortune that they had had in their lives, and they wanted to share that good fortune with other people. And in each case, they had at some point in their lives had an event or stumbled upon something or seen something, read something, somehow something had crossed their path that they just could not look away from. In the case of Melinda Gates, it was some of the diseases that children get in the third world. Once she and her husband became aware of these, she just could not and would not look away from that. That became her life's work. And in each case, these people tell the stories of something so momentous that their life was changed and that became their focus.
Let's talk about Paul Tudor Jones. There's a foundation he started called the Robin Hood Foundation, which I thought that's an interesting image to go along with the foundation's name, because Robin Hood was notorious from robbing the rich and giving to the poor. So this story, let me just mention a quote that you've got, and this is right at the beginning of the book. From 52 years of observation, the people who I see in life that are happiest, the most fulfilled, and have a sparkle in their eyes are those who have a huge component of service in their lives and in some form or fashion give to other people besides themselves. And this is a quote from Paul Tudor Jones. Let's talk about this man and how he has gotten involved with education.
Paul has really devoted his life, his non-business life, to education in the poorest parts of New York City. He has started the Robin Hood Foundation, which is involved with all sorts of anti-poverty programs in New York City. He's from Memphis. He's not a native New Yorker. He came to New York, and in the financial markets, he found success. And he felt that, A, he had owed his adopted city something to give back, but B, New York is a city of opposites. It's a city of great wealth and great poverty, and he felt that he had a responsibility to do something to redress that if he could. So the Robin Hood Foundation, he started with some people who are very successful in the financial markets, and they pay for all of the expenses of the foundation, and all the money they raise, they funnel straight into anti-poverty programs. They're very rigorous about evaluating these programs, making sure that the money is spent well, reporting back to the donors about the way the money is spent. But he has really devoted his life to a crusade against poverty in New York City. Because, like I said about the others, he saw something, poverty in New York, that he really could not and would not ignore.
I like how there's so much good information that's given about this foundation and about Paul. There is an MIT-trained economist that runs an intensive evaluation process that assesses the impact of every program the foundation supports, which is complementary to what you just said. But to assign someone to do the tracking, goodness, I wish we could do that with the government.
That's
showing where the money goes and then having the integrity, like you said, to tell the people that are giving here, if you know where your money's going, then you're going to feel good about it.
Paul's is a great story for many of us because he spent 5 years working on after-school programs in Bedford-Stuyvesant, one of the poor areas of Brooklyn. And at the end of 5 years, he had a group of Harvard-trained evaluators come in and evaluate the impact his programs had made. And what he found is that there was no impact. He had spent tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars. He had spent countless hours of his own and other people's time. And he was having no material impact on getting these kids into college. His goal was to get these kids, you know, through high school and into college and on their way. And it really shook him up. And as somebody who's interested in philanthropy, it should shake all of us up. You can spend an enormous amount of money and have absolutely no impact. It's very important that you learn a lot about what you're giving your money to.
Oh, without question. And sadly, there have been many various, charity groups, I'll use that terminology, that have been found to spend sometimes as much as 75% of all the money that comes in for quote-unquote administrative costs, and maybe the remaining 25%, if they're lucky, goes to the people involved. I mean, it's supposed to be involving or helping. Now, he made the statement that unless you have the right technology, the right delivery mechanism, and the right intellectual capacity to solve the problem that you wanted to solve, and unless you've articulated goals and have a proven methodology that will allow you to achieve those goals, then anything you do, is just fluff. It's just, I wish, and it's not going to get anything done.
He has a very hard-nosed view of philanthropy. It isn't about making you feel good. It's about having an impact. And if you're not having an impact, you better look again. I think one of the things that this tells us is as donors, each of these people, you can tell when you read their stories, has really decided to focus their life and their energies and their philanthropies on a particular cause. Many of them still have the day job, but their giving has focused in one place. And I think in these rough economic times, it's a very good model for all of us to follow. It's a very good model because then you became deeply aware of everything about the organization you're supporting. But also, we've all got a lot less money to give at the moment. You know, the economy has affected absolutely everybody. And so many, in this environment, many nonprofits will struggle and many will go under. And if you become a loyal donor, you really have an impact on an organization and you really become an invaluable philanthropist.
And it's important that you ask that this group or organization be accountable.
Absolutely.
And I think that that is extremely important. And now his results are very much recordable. And he can go to the people whenever he's raising money or talking about things. It's just amazing. One of the things that happened with him that I thought was quite astonishing is that he had hired a young man that had tremendous ethics, and they wanted to be sure that they achieved their objective, and they did something that's unheard of in today's world, that half of the teachers, they did evaluations on the teachers, and half of the teachers they found were not doing the work and were not doing their job, and they let those teachers go.
He set up a school with very, very high standards because the only way kids were going to get into college is if they had rigorous education from the time that they were young. He found that starting in the seventh grade was just too late, so he started a K through eight school. And basically, he set standards from the school, and if the school didn't meet the standards, the teachers who couldn't meet them were asked to leave. It's very unusual. It was a charter school. He's actually starting a second one now, a charter school here in New York. But you really, you know, if you're giving your money and you're giving your time and you're giving your attention to a cause, they should be held accountable. And, you know, you should be visiting that cause. You should be getting to know the people who work there. You should be reading their annual reports. You should be visiting. You should really immerse yourself in what you're giving your money to.
I agree. Now, you mentioned Melinda Gates at the beginning. She and Bill Gates have really made some interesting choices. And, of course, everybody knows how close they are to Warren Buffett. And they have done something that I thought was absolutely awesome. Even with their own family, they said, with the fortune that we have, we want to make sure that the foundation that we established within 50 years after we're gone is going to be dissolved. Boy, that is really amazing.
You know, it's very much to your earlier point about organizations that really become their own reason for existing, where overhead
yes.
becomes their biggest expense. She and Bill Gates have very defined goals. They want to eradicate malaria, they want a vaccine for AIDS, and they want to change high school education in the United States. You know, with the amount of money they have, they could have run in 30 different directions, but
mm-hmm.
they've really focused down on three. And they believe that they can solve these things in the next 50 years, and that if the organization continues to exist, it will just, you know, it'll self-perpetuate. The goals will become watered down. So they've established a really defined focus, and the foundation will cease to exist 50 years after the last of the three board members, who's Warren Buffett, Melinda Gates, and Bill Gates, died.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a profound,
yeah.
profound arrangement.
One of the interesting things about Melinda Gates is when you talk to her, she makes a wonderful points about malaria and about AIDS and about the approaches that she and her husband are taking to them. But she made two points that really, really stuck with me. One was that one of the most important things she's doing has nothing to do with money. She is giving voice to the voiceless. She is trying to let the world know what women who live in dire poverty all over this planet experience, because those women are voiceless, and because she's Melinda Gates, she has a voice.
Mm-hmm.
And that isn't dollars and cents. That's something beyond that. And she really feels that's her mission. The second thing that she said to me, which really is relevant to all of us, is that one of the unforeseen pleasures of philanthropy was working with her husband. Philanthropy is something we can do as families. You know, we run in different directions all day long. We're at school and we have different jobs. And, you know, families these days are scattered in a million different directions. But philanthropy really can bring us all back together. A single cause that everybody in the family cares about and can devote some of their time and focus to. And for her, you know, it's a Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, For the rest of us, it's going to be our local YMCA or our local hospital or a church group or something, you know, much more local and lower key, but just as important to our family.
I agree. Connie Duckworth said, "We went to a bombed-out school building, a cinder block building, and as it was January, the temperature was in the 20s. There were dozens of women and children living in this bombed-out building. No windows, no heat, no electricity, no running water, no food, no furniture, trying to live through the winter, squatting through the winter. I looked at these children's faces and I thought, those could be my children. I literally went back on the plane and thought, I am doing something. I don't know what it is, but I am doing something." Connie Duckworth, this is a woman you became acquainted through Goldman Sachs with.
Yes, we worked there together.
And she is running a rug business, Arzu. Let's talk about this amazing woman who has done something that I don't think, if anybody had told her this in a fortune cookie, she would have believed it would have ever have happened to her.
It is just an amazing story. Here's a woman who was the first sales and trading partner of Goldman Sachs. She ran Goldman Sachs' Chicago office. She has four school-aged children. I can't imagine, you know, a more amazing, you know, 20th century success story. And she had something missing in her life. You know, she didn't know what she was looking for, but she was looking. Most of the people who found their causes, they just had their eyes open, they had their ears open. There was something out there that they were looking for, but they didn't know quite what it was. And she actually got sent by the State Department to Kabul, and she saw these children, as you mentioned, these children and women squatting, and she knew she had found it. She needed to find a way for women in Afghanistan who basically cannot leave their homes, cannot defy the men in their villages, cannot get educated, a way for these women to earn a productive living for their families. And so these women all over Afghanistan weave rugs for her. She sells them into the U.S. market. She pays the women while they're weaving. She educates their children. She gives them prenatal care. And all of the women and their children go to literacy and numeracy classes. It's really just an amazing story. It's called Arzu Rugs. You can buy the rugs in the United States. They're handmade. They're wonderful. They come with a story of the woman's life. Meanwhile, these women are getting educated, and as are their children, and they've got a productive means of supporting their families.
Her statement that economic empowerment is the driver for women's larger empowerment is so true. When you look back at the history of the United States and the battle that went on for the right to vote for women's rights, and it wasn't all that long ago that it started, and it's only been the last 50, 60 years that women have really been able to see the changes in the United States. And again, that's a relatively short period of time. Most of the women that were behind it at that time did come from a wealthier environment. They had the flexibility. They weren't in the sweatshops. They were able to put their energies behind what needed to be done. And I think that Connie has done an incredible job here. She told some information that just was amazing. Afghan women have an average of 8 pregnancies, and you know that the lifespan of a woman in that environment that she described so aptly in the paragraph that I quoted is very hard. It's very harsh.
I think it was about 46.
That old? I would have thought it would have been in the late 30s.
I think it was 46, but, you know, that's 30 years shorter than an American woman's life.
Oh, yes, if they make it there.
Yeah.
And then they've
got very little prenatal care, postnatal care.
Yeah. Right, no food. Yeah. They cannot speak up. Their entire lives depend on this, and that's where the micro loan system has enabled women in so many different parts of the world to start seeing how they can stand on their own 2 feet. Education always is that key, but knowing how to use it so that economically it is going to enable you to pull yourself up. That's a real, real challenge. And so having their own business, their own rug business, and being supported in that way. I've known a number of women here in the Pacific Northwest who would travel to Egypt and would buy goods over there, and they would go to certain villages. They would buy items that were made by hand. Sometimes it was glass. It was just gorgeous, and they'd bring it back. But they would let everybody know, when you're buying this, you are helping women in this village, in this part of the world, this is what they're doing. This is what you're helping to support when you buy this. And it's just very meaningful because, as you've already stated, when we know what the money's going for, whether it's something in our local community or whether it's something in another part of the world, it doesn't make any difference. You need to know and examine carefully, not just write the check, but know and examine what it is that you're giving your money to, because it makes a difference. But and holding them responsible and accountable for what they do as a charity, it is just absolutely, absolutely amazing. So you have these different people, and with Connie, one of the things that she brought out, which actually some of the other people you interviewed, is that you must become aware of the culture you're going into. And there's a couple that you talked about. I believe it's Liz and Stephen Alderman.
Yeah.
I was just so pleased to read their remarks, because they said when they go in to work with women, and their story is incredible, you'll have to share it, but when they go in, they ask, what do you need? What do you need? And the story about the donkey was wonderful. Tell us about Liz and Stephen.
There's two different stories where people were showing enormous cultural sensitivity. One was Donna and Philip Berber, and that they're the story of the donkey. And the Liz and Steve Alderman is the story of helping people who've had post-traumatic trauma. Donna and Philip Berber have been devoting their life and their resources to poverty in Ethiopia, and the number one message that they have for their donors and that they have learned from their years working in Ethiopia is that you ask and you don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
You ask people what they want. They're living there. It's their world. They know better than we do, and we should stop imposing what we think and what we believe. Donna met a woman who traveled back and forth to market. It used to take her a whole day a week to take the grain that she would grow in her village to the market, and then a day to walk back. And, you know, Donna asked her, what can I do? What can I do to help you? Thinking she would want medicine, thinking she would want education. You know, imagining all the things that Donna would want if Donna were her.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the wrong question, she realized. The question is, what do you want? And what the woman wanted was a donkey. If she had a donkey, the donkey could haul the grain. Her days would go quicker. Her life would be easier. And the message that Donna and Philip Berber and their Glimmer of Hope Foundation is that we will give people what they know will make their lives better. And we will help them help themselves. But we will not tell them what's right for them, because we don't live there. We live in the United States, and we can't begin to understand what's needed in their lives.
And I think that is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
I think that is so very, very important. Now, let's talk about Liz and
Liz and Steve Alderman are two of the most amazing people I have ever met. Steve is a physician. Liz is a special ed teacher. They had the horror that every parent dreads. Their son was actually at a meeting at Windows on the World on September 11th. He didn't actually work in the Trade Center. He was at a meeting, and their son, who at the time was 25 years old and was a reporter for Bloomberg News, perished in the tragedy. And, you know, Liz said basically she crawled into bed. You know, she had lost her child. She had lost one of her three children. And, you know, she was grieving as any parent would. And she watched a show one day about how you bring people who have suffered the horrors of terror back to life, how you make them want to live again, how do you make them productive members of society again. And there was a professor at Harvard who was talking about what we know about the state of the art of repairing people psychologically. And to make a long story short, they took the money that they were given as a from the tragedy, and they have spent it in starting clinics in Cambodia and in Uganda and places where people have suffered unspeakable terror.
Mm-hmm.
And they have spent it training physicians and other health workers all over the world in the state of art of what we know about bringing people back who've really suffered, you know, the most unspeakable crimes in humanity. And as Liz said, you know, my son died in terrorism, and there's nothing I can do, but I can do something for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And they have devoted their lives to something they didn't even know existed before September 11th, 2001. You know, it's very much what I was saying about the rest of it. Things happen to us. Sometimes they're tragic. Sometimes they're wonderful. But sometimes you just can't look away. It changes your life forever, and you really have something that is meaningful and important to you to give your focus to?
She brought out 2 points that I would like to share with my audience, is that when you're working with people and you're trying to help them overcome whatever the tragedy might be, there is that negative downside, the fear, the ignorance, many times the level of superstition develops that mentally, emotionally, and spiritually cripples the person. And she states how this kind of a problem can go from generation to generation, and you've got to break that cycle of repetition. And a child growing up in a home with parents suffering with traumatic depression is going to have a set of problems from his or her environment. And that if you treat a child, you can be very successful with children. But don't even bother doing that unless you can get to the mother. And if there is a father there, a father. But you must deal with the parents and help them get past it. Sadly, we see so much of the result of hatred and anger that is perpetuated over and over again. We have these cycles in history that we're reliving again today. And I've talked to people, they say, when is it ever going to stop? So Liz and Stephen are really doing a good job at trying to make a difference on this and so many special ways. And then you talk about Bob and Suzanne Wright, who are very much involved with autism because of what they went through with their family. Let's talk about them for just a moment.
Bob Wright was the CEO of NBC Universal, at the pinnacle of corporate America, one of the most important executives in one of the most important companies. He's the vice chairman of General Electric. And his grandson was found to have autism. And he and his wife were trying to do everything they could to help their daughter with their grandson and were absolutely dumbfounded at how little we know about autism, how few services are available. They lived in Connecticut. How few services were available to their daughter to help her with her son and the needs that her son had. And again, it was one of those life-changing moments. He retired as chairman of NBC Universal. They have founded something called Autism Speaks. It's become the national organization. Suzanne Wright was able to get the United Nations to declare an Autism Day because this is not an American problem. This is a global problem. They have raised money. They have poured money into research. They have, you know, studied what services work best for families suffering with autism, and they have really helped focus the national agenda on something that, you know, about 1 in 100 boys suffer from, and is growing, and we really don't know how or why.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in every family it's a tragedy, and with that many young boys suffering from it, you know, we all know somebody or know somebody tangentially who's had this in their family, and you know, it breaks your heart. So Bob and Suzanne really found a focus for their life in their own family, and it's something that had happened to their own family. And you know, all of these people, the reason I called the book Be the Change, all of these people are fundamentally altering other people's lives in profound ways, and they certainly fall into that category. They are touching people all over the United States and all over the world whose families have been touched by autism.
One person can make a difference. And whether you're wealthy or whether you are not, you make a difference with how you spend your money or how you put your effort out there to interact with others, because we all have to interact. That's just a part of life. It's just something that's there. And when we can do it in a more constructive way with mindful attention to what needs to be taken care of, it does make a difference. And when you pass it along to others, you're teaching and educating others, then the ripple effect is quite profound. Lisa, and like I think your book, Be the Change, is outstanding.
Thank you.
I think you have done an incredible job representing some very, very special people, and there's even more stories in the book for those of you listening. You can find it on Amazon.com. We don't have a website. Lisa doesn't have a website that we can go to. Lisa, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today. Be the Change, Lisa Endlich. The last name is spelled E-N-D-L-I-C-H. This is a book you should have in your library. It can really make a difference in how you think and also in how you choose to be a contributor in this experience we call life. Again, Lisa, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be going to a break. We'll be coming back in just a moment. Again, B Be the change. Why not? I think you've got something special to offer. Go out there and share it. Donna Sebo here. We'll be back in just a moment.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Give me a call at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And that's a worldwide toll-free number. Or you can call me on 530-876-9916. That's 530-876-9916. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, you're welcome to ask me about anything that you like once I give you my perceptions about what I see for you as an individual. And I had someone I was chatting with just the other day, and they said, this is so interesting. How did you develop your skill, Donna, where, you know, someone just says, hi, this is George, or I'm Donald Duck, or whatever, and then you're off and you're running. You just, you don't have a split second in there. You just go for it. Well, I disciplined myself that way. And like any skill, there is a level of repetition that you must do over and over and over and over again, until you reach that point where you know that you just do it. It's just automatic. Sort of like learning how to ride a bicycle or playing a piano well, doing anything well. It is repetition. And lots of times people make the mistake when they think that they want to develop their own intuitive processes. And that was one of the things in my class, Mind Vision, that I had so much fun with, because every one of my students, to their amazement, demonstrated intuitive skills. Each of them were demonstrating them differently. And part of what I am able to do is to be able to appreciate and to show individuals that their own uniqueness has merit and has value. When you start comparing yourself to other people, you'll lose sight of your own uniqueness many times. So this is something that I was able to share with them. And they were stunned. They were absolutely stunned at how really good they were. Now, they may not want to dedicate 10 years to practice as I did before I was asked to become a professional. They may not want to do it, but the fact is that they became aware of their own potential and their own capabilities, put them a step closer to understanding that this is something that is innate in everyone. It belongs to everyone. If at any time somebody says there's only one way to do something or their way is the only way, make sure you've got on your running shoes, because you don't want to be learning from someone who has that tight a paradigm in their thinking. There are so many different ways the skill can demonstrate itself. But again, for me, the discipline of being able to work very quickly, very fast, without any tools, took a lot of practice. And this is something that you need to remember. If you're interested in developing your own skill, then practice, 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 practice. That's the only thing I can, you know, advocate for you. And you're going to find what works best for you and what doesn't. Remember, you're always going to be a student. You never get there. I haven't gotten there, wherever there is supposed to be. Remember, you're always a work in progress, and that gives you a lot to look forward to. Donna Sebo here. Give me a call if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Toll free worldwide, or 530-876-9916. Danielle Adams said, the air is sweet and cool, the grass an emerald green, children playing in the yard in a cheerful springtime scene. The earth is sprouting beauty now, the trees are all in flower, dogwoods display pink, white blossoms in a gorgeous, magical hour. Oh, thank you for lovely May. Danielle Adams, beautifully stated, beautifully stated. Harry Potter, remember in one of the movies, and I don't remember which one it is right off the top of my head, maybe one of you can call in and tell me, the movie that had the phoenix, the bird of immortality that saved Harry Potter's life. Well, the phoenix has for centuries represented rebirth. Why? Because it creates its own funeral pyre. And this is the story behind the phoenix. It's considered the most beautiful of any imaginary creature that was ever thought of, and it's always symbolized hope and the continuity of life after death. It always has been depicted, apparently, with feathers of red and gold, the color of a rising sun. And the phoenix had this melodious voice that, as its time came close to die, would become very, very sad and would have a mournful sound to it. Other creatures that would hear the phoenix singing its song of death were then so overcome by beauty and sadness that they themselves would die. Now, according to legend, only one phoenix could live at a time. One and only one. And there was a Greek poet, his name was Hesiod, he wrote in the 18th century B.C., he said that the phoenix lived nine times the lifespan of a long-living raven. Other people said that the phoenix would live for 97,200 years. Now, when the bird felt death approaching, it built itself a pyre of wild cinnamon and died in the flames. But from the ashes there then arose a new phoenix, which was so carefully encased in an egg. An egg, very unique egg, an egg of myrrh. And the new phoenix that was in that egg was taken to a wonderful city, the Egyptian city of Heliopolis, where it was laid on the altar of the sun. Now the ashes that were laid, along with the egg, were said to have the power of bringing a dead man or woman back to life. And there was an emperor, a Roman emperor, A.D., and his name was Elagabalus. He lived from A.D. 205, excuse me, to 22. It is said that he decided he was going to eat phoenix meat in order to achieve immortality. Well, nobody sent him the Phoenix. They sent him a bird of paradise. And I'm going to tell you after this caller what happened when he ate this bird. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. Let's go to our first caller of the day. Hi. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
My name is Michael.
Hi, Michael.
And calling from Carmel.
Carmel, California.
Yes.
All right. Beautiful California. I bet the sun's shining.
Actually, it's raining now.
Are you serious? You mean you got some water from the northwest? Woohoo!
Finally. Yeah,
we got your
raining
sunshine.
Right now.
We got your sunshine.
Oh, good. We'll keep it for a while. We need
the
rain.
Well, we need the sun, so we'll keep it, and you can take the rain.
Okay.
We'll be happy to share.
For a while.
I like how you qualified that, for a while. Okay, Michael. All right, let's get down to business. First thing that I'm looking at is I want you to be patient, but at the same time, I have this wonderful sense of excitement. It's as if little tendrils of opportunity are beginning to sort of bud for you. And you go, sometimes you go, oh, and maybe it's just my imagination. But remember, Michael, it takes time for those buds to open up. They're not going to be like a, you know, an amaryllis where they're just going to seemingly open up overnight. That's not what's going to happen with these buds. These buds are going to open up into opportunities that are going to be holding their own for a while. So they've got a long-term patterning to them, and that's what you want. So be patient with what's going on, Michael, because the results are going to be positive. So keep nurturing, keep watering, fertilizing, all of these things that you're having to do. I know it's tedious. We all would like a mixture of some magical potion. We'd add water, mix, swallow it, drink it, toss it out, whatever it would take, and then bingo, everything's okay. It doesn't work that way. You are going to find you've got a lot of little things that have to constantly be adjusted as you're going along. I give you 6 to 9 months, and I think you're going to find yourself feeling very good about having put in the time, the effort, and the energy into having the patterning of result that you're going to see. So this is very important. Be consistent and hold true to your course. Don't think that shortcuts are going to make it for you, because they're not. They're going to actually cause a delay. So that it's up to you. Totally up to you to be prudent. Also, I'm looking at you having a problem with one of your teeth. And I think what it is that there is a nerve. And there may be a sensitivity in a section of enamel that is becoming rather thin. But there is something that's going on with a tooth. I think it's on the left side of the mouth. I could be wrong with this perception. But one of your teeth, and it's towards the front part of the mouth, it's becoming super sensitive. So you might want to, the next time you go in to have your teeth cleaned or you're going to have a dental checkup, talk with your dentist and ask what you can do to take care of that sensitivity. And it might be just using a toothpaste that deals with sensitivity. And that may help you quite a bit. I don't see a cavity per se, but I just think there's a heightened sensitivity. Do you have a question for me?
Well, actually, I think you've answered it. I'm looking for a new job. I got laid off with a reduction in workforce, and I'm negotiating presently with a company that I think could be a good fit. And I'm wondering how you see that.
Well, I want you to be, again, aware that in negotiating with the company, try to keep in perspective that this is a company that is going to have some spurts of growth that are not really going to be expected. You would like to be perceived as a person that is a problem solver, that this is something you enjoy doing. You like being part of a team. And there are a lot of people that are vying for this position and some others. And this company, if it gets down to a point of money, really have an honest communication with someone and say, you know what, I'm willing to come in to do what needs to be done. The money's okay, but I really want to be with a company that's going to provide me the right environment so that I can feel like I can really be a part of the team.
Okay.
And that could make a difference.
Okay.
Does that help you at all?
Yeah, that does. I mean, that falls right in line with what we're talking about.
Wonderful. Now, Michael, I need to take a break. Did you want to stay on the line and discuss anything else with me, or are we pretty clear?
Sure, I would.
Okay.
I have one more question.
All right, Michael, stay on the line then. We'll be coming back in just a moment. This is Donna Siebel. Hey, at 888-815-9756. We can chat if you like, but we'll have to wait till after break. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Siebel. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Siebel accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Siebel will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Siebel's website, www.DelphiInternational.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Siebel to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756 or 530-876-9916. Now, before we go to our Michael on the line, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Sue Ursler, and oh, this is going to be great. We're going to be going to the top of the world, Mount Everest. That's right. She and her husband climbed that phenomenal mountain, and their story is incredible. So I'll be talking with Sue, and she lives here in the Pacific Northwest, which is just amazing. They're quite a team, and it was an adventure. So we'll be having that adventure tomorrow. Let's go back to Michael. Michael, thank you very much for waiting so patiently. Did what I say to you make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes, yeah. I mean, it's a new negotiation for both of us. We're both trying to figure out how to make this work.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be a new position that he's never had before. And I kind of think the guy's really honest, straightforward, and looking forward, and he's doing the same. So,
well, remember, when you can we're all interested in making more money, no question about that. And with the situation we have today, with all of the paranoia that's being nurtured, and I'm not saying we're not having tough times, I'm not being Pollyannish, but if you can look at this environment and say, I want to be a part of a company that really has an earnest desire to be part of the growing economy of this country that we're in, of the neighborhood we're in, of the state we're in, whatever, however you want to choose to put it. When you do that, because people who are in business for themselves, if they're in manufacturing, so much of the work has gone overseas. Everything that we can do that empowers business to be in the United States and to create products and services that are going to be able to be marketed elsewhere, this is very positive. It's very positive. So when you come from that positioning, put yourself in his shoes. What would you like to hear from someone? If you were in a business of your own, what qualities would you want for a person to have? What qualities would you want that person to have so that you would know that they were a team player?
Well, integrity, honesty, flexibility.
And a problem solver. Someone that is going to be there. Flexibility is very important, but it's how do we resolve the challenges and not being afraid of the big W, work.
Okay.
And I think, I really think that there's a, you've got a lot going for you. So there's a lot of people that at this time may have been laid off, but it gives them an opportunity to perhaps explore venues that they would never have considered if they were sitting comfortably in a job with benefits. They'd say, well, why change? I don't need to do that. So you have an opportunity here to really expand into something that's going to allow you to put your skills and abilities to work.
Well, actually, it's correct. I'm looking at it as a blessing from that other job. It's like a 1,000-pound weight was lifted off my shoulders.
Good for you.
So I haven't been depressed at all. I've been out of work for almost 2 months. I feel great, and I know another door is going to open, just like this one is.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, Michael, thank you so much for calling in today.
Thank you, and I have a friend that has a radio show. She might call you to see if she could set up an interview. She's usually broadcast on Saturdays from Monterey.
Oh, I'd love to do that. I just love to do that. I always enjoy sharing my skills with other people. That's fine.
I enjoy your show, and you have a nice time, okay?
Thank you, sir. And if she needs
to call, keep the sun too long.
Okay. All right. We'll take the lasso off the sun. And
thank you very much, Donna. I will keep you posted on what happens.
All right. Wonderful, Michael. Good luck to you. This is Donna Sebo. Hey, I've got to finish about the Phoenix, right? And we won't have time to take another caller. Remember the Emperor? Yes, he was going to eat the Phoenix. Well, someone in the kitchen said, not on my watch. No, they sent him a bird of paradise. And he didn't know the difference. He ate it. And he thought, I'm going to be an immortal. Well, somebody decided they were going to make sure he checked out early. He was murdered a short time afterwards. But scholars today think that the germ of this legend regarding the phoenix came from the Orient. It was adopted by the sun-worshipping priest of Heliopolis as an allegory of the sun's daily setting and rebirth. Now, this is a myth that's been perpetuated for generations, but people love it. And in Christian art, the resurrected phoenix became a popular symbol of Christ risen from the grave. Stories keep carried, you know, we keep carrying them forward. Now, its name, they think, may have come from a misunderstanding by Herodotus, the Greek historian of the 5th century B.C. When he was giving the account of the bird, he may have mistakenly given it the name Phoenix because of a palm tree. Its name in Greek is called Phoenix, but it's spelled P-H-O-I-N-I-X instead of P-H-O-E-N-I-X. And the Phoenix was usually pictured in that palm tree. So they think that's how the bird got its name. Well, if nothing else, it makes for a great movie, and I love the Phoenix in Harry Potter. Well, this is Donna Sebo. We're out of time, and there's just so much wonderful stuff coming up, and all of the posting regarding the upcoming guests are going to be up on the BBS website later on today. And just know that no matter where you are, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. It belongs to you, nobody else. You're the boss. Enjoy this fabulous weekend, count your blessings, and realize you make a difference in ways that you could never imagine. Be consciously present with where you are and know that what you do is going to affect someone else. So be thoughtful about your words and be thoughtful with your actions. Donna Siebel here. See you same time, same place, right here next week. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.